Complex pain syndrome, original pain syndrome, and significant pain and disability. It takes a subject population to also determine the safety of a single protocol subject group, early onset therapy, to determine preliminary evidence of efficacy in the two above subject groups, so those with newly as well as recurrent. The results of the analysis will help to determine which group will present the best preliminary and point for efficacy in the design of a larger randomized study. So what the investigators are asking specifically for this application is to be able to do at least one patient, review that experience, and then add two more patients, and then do a thorough DSMB type analysis before proceeding. So this application is currently approved at Tampa General Hospital to do one patient. And if they were approved and did the one patient, they would apply for the TGA and the IRB to do the additional patient. In the previous reviews, there were numerous issues related both to the justification and the rationale for doing this study, the safety of doing this, the informed consent aspect and the ethics of that, and they addressed a lot of the issues. So what I'd like to do now is walk through the current response, which is in the form of a letter, which is the top thing in your agenda packet. So for the most part, they've been very, very responsive. They have addressed a lot of different issues. We've had several consultants address this, and the two consultants whose material I saw, especially the latest one from Chicago, was in concurrence with the specific issues related to whether the risk-benefit ratio was acceptable, and yes, it was. Are there enough safeguards in place for adequate subject safety? Risk minimized. They said yes, risks are minimized, but they thought they should add IV antibiotics to for prophylaxis purposes, since I think about a third of patients will develop pneumonia due to just the process of being in standard general anesthesia. And that the addition of ketamine dose titration should be better specified in the protocol. And generally, I agree with those recommendations. So, if we go back to the letter, the first page has two comments which they responded to adequately. One was providing a justification for charging the patient to participate in a research study of this nature. And they cited some language from the FDA CFR that states that an investigator or sponsor or manufacturer can charge for participating in a research study as long as they are not commercializing it and as long as they are not recovering more than the cost of production of the device. It's not directly addressing the issue, but I think you can extrapolate that it's CDS cost, which baseline deposit is like $27,000 and could go up to $70,000. But those are really related to the specific cost that I would sort of apply. And the second issue on that page is that the CRA has left the program or the institution, and the PI proposes that he will carry out this function in the meantime. I have a problem with that, since the role of the CRA is really over and above what the PI should do in terms of advocacy and guardianship. So I think we should strongly ask them to do one of two things, either hire one now or tell them that it will not be open if it were approvable. Without demonstration of having a CRA who's already trained and on board. So I'm now going back to number one listed on the second page. I have no concerns with that, number one. And number two, I think they adequately addressed those that you can offer for the follow. Number three has to do with the risk profile of ketamine is not well established. I think they've done a good job responding to that issue. What they don't do is when they do list the risk, for example, the risk of increased or hypertension from the ketamine, they don't also say that this could be corrected by the specific drugs, which includes the drugs that we are giving. I think that even corner needs to address that. So in the content form, they need to add under the wheel, open amen in the increase in high blood pressure, that this could be caused by the third or drug that you are getting. Number four, they added is requested significant issue of ischemia, ischemic heart disease. What they don't do is tell us how they're going to operationalize significant. So they need to explain what is significant in terms of eligibility criteria or exclusion criteria. Number five, I didn't see the signatures, but I assume you've got the signatures. Okay. Number six, no concerns with regard to that. Number seven, number four, I'm not okay with. They need to explain what significant ischemic heart disease is. So they need to explain what that is, because there's no criteria to know.
Well, we could just drop significant and say this is ischemic heart
disease. Yeah, that's then anybody who is looking at the criteria can know how what
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Otherwise, we would have hammered it out. Number eight is similar to number four. Okay, recent MI and issue of alcohol abuse. Again, it's not very clear to me what constitutes recent. If I had it 2 years ago, is that okay or not okay? So they need again to qualify either it's any history or they need to be the time parameter on that. Number 10, which has to do with SDI-IND application. I think their justification is understandable. I could follow that. Other than asking them to actually apply, I think the rationale and explanation they provide are consistent with my interpretation of the language. Number 11, it has to do with the agreement with the guarantor with regard to the financial arrangement. And in essence, the issue was it's a significant cost incurred to the patient and it could result in a major financial burden. And they went back to the CGH financial officer, who then, to use the exact language, basically assured the investigator that CGH is not interested in creating financial ruin for a research subject. This hospital, of course, go beyond what the subject or the guarantor can reasonably pay. In addition, so essentially they put in a verbal agreement, but then they give us a promissory note with language that sort of goes against what that paragraph is saying. The promissory note language, if you disregard the numbers, because they were going to insert the real numbers for this photo, for which they should before we can even consider approving it, suggests that they're going to pursue every avenue to recuperate the cost. So I'm not sure what the agreement and resolution is. So first thing, the language has to include the actual numbers. Number two, if TEH is sort of saying we're going to bill you, but then if you can't pay, we'll drop it, then the language in the promissory note has to say the same thing. They added a statement and basically it was recommended. The number 14, they were asking to the length of stay during this procedure and they cite 7 to 9 days, but they don't exactly say how the data were derived, but I assume this is through their verification with the conversations with the PI of the German study, but it's not in any other documentation that they've provided us. So maybe that's fine. Number 15, I'm fine with it. 16, okay. Other than the fact that the statement in the promissory note has to be consistent with that. Number 17, that information is included. There's a number of areas in the consent form and the application that I have pointed for them to add clarification and additional. additional information. The main concern is that the financial burden to me that still is not reduced or clarified. Yeah, we still, other than the fact that they were able to procure an agreement with radiology and they have an agreement with the Ronald McDonald House for the housing for the relatives, they have done some significant work in that regard. But it's still a significant financial burden. Again, I'm not sure how they're going to choose the first patient.
Well, that's true.
We'll ask that point.
Yeah. I agree with that, because specific
to the patient. I think they're going to be fully informed that, you know, there's just going to cost a lot of money. And that's kind of how I found it in the list. I thought, as long as the patients are fully informed and they really know what they're getting into financially.
Yeah. Here's the cost benefit that Norma is referring to. If you take the German data, which is not published, 30 patients unpublished, I don't know how they get away with that price.
Right.
If you do it 2 patients, I can understand. If you take that data, about a third will get into permanent remission.
Right.
Yeah. And the other
different third,
yeah,
get better, or the third,
yeah.
Third,
yeah.
Third,
yeah.
Third get worse.
Yeah.
The third stay the same. Well, I worked at a medical school a long time ago. It doesn't matter the disease.
So, yeah, for some people, it's really going to be good. But for others,
I think they need to know up front that there's a two-thirds chance that this is not going to help.
I strongly agree with what the first reviewer said too. He suggested that at least 2 independent pain practitioners. Data other than the
preliminary data.
I know.
Daily.
Someone has to, that's why the peer review, I mean the coma and the cost and the burden to the patient is...
We asked the anesthesiologist, they're willing to accept the risk-benefit ratio.
And I just want to emphasize that benefit are these are people who are terrible and suicide is high and they failed everything else and they're desperate.
Discuss with Mr. Sylvia. Just to comment. The hospital contract that they give out in a situation confuses gross
charges that the payer is responsible for. And they confuse the word charges in and of themselves. And even when they talk, they confuse it. And so what we have to make clear is that hospital charges are really arbitrary, random number, as we all know, versus the actual charge the patient will be responsible for.
Okay. Then, there are two points of view here they can see the reviewers. We got three outside anesthesiologists to be expert reviewers for us about risk benefit. And they were helpful. They made recommendations, which we're going to ask to be incorporated. But because of the board meeting, we had two points of view about whether to use the broad spectrum prophylactic or not. We're going to ask you to go to one of our IT faculty to give you a yay or nay and develop an approach for these patients. In that case. When we were talking about that, it's not part of the protocol right now because it's not standard of care. Yeah, there are many patients who are interested in 5 days. If we start putting everybody in the hospital, I'm not sure that a lot of people step into your life.
And then both arguments were used
The reviewer was because of the highest risk of pneumonia over in the Germany study, but they had suggested five.
Not published.
Right.